Welcome to 68 Shouting Moments presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Today we catch up with two of the leading scorers from that incredible 1979 national title game between Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. We talked to former Indiana State standout Carl Nix, former Michigan State player Greg Kelser about that incredible game that changed college basketball. All right, welcome into 68 Shining Moments and one of the greatest games, one of the most impactful games of all time in NCAA tournament history was the 1979 national title game between Indiana State and Michigan State. We couldn't get Magic and Larry, but we did the next best thing, and we brought on Carl Nix and Greg Kelser from Indiana State and Michigan State. Guys, I appreciate you guys couldn't get Larry and Magic for me also.
Larry's not even here. He's down in Naples. And I don't know. Larry, after we just had our reunion not too long ago, and I think that was the last thing for Larry. I can just feel it and can tell. He said, I'm not doing anything else. I think he's threw the towel in, to be honest.
That doesn't surprise me. Larry and Magic were a little different in that respect. Right. Probably even back then. We'll get into it a little bit. Greg, start with you a little bit. I was young, so I don't remember the game. I'm not going to lie to you. I was 8 years old. What was the buildup and the significance of that game for college basketball? At the time, I assume you had no idea what type of impact it would have on the sport.
I don't think anybody could have had any idea how the game would measure up in terms of its significance on the college basketball landscape. But you had two transcendent players coming in, and the network and people really gravitated to that. You had two players that were both worthy of College Basketball Player of the Year honors. And you had an Indiana State team that was undefeated. And in no small measure, the two star players, so to speak, I think Carl was a star. I think I was a star. but the two players that really were being highlighted, the fact that one was black and one was white did not get lost in the whole thing. So, you know, there were all kinds of reasons for people to get engaged. And then clearly, if Urban and Larry don't go on to have the historic careers at the NBA level that they had, then the game wouldn't have, I don't think it would have had the same shelf life. But that was the start of a great rivalry. Hey, listen, everything played out. One went to the Lakers, a historic franchise. The other went to the Boston Celtics, a historic franchise. And they won championships. They competed against each other at the highest level. So all of that plays into keeping the initial game, the initial competition between the two in college. It'll keep it secure for many, many years to come.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Carl, when you first got there, when you got to Indiana State and you saw Larry, what surprised you the most about him? Because you came from the JUCO ranks. So what kind of just was like, wow, about Larry?
Well, first I was there as a freshman, and then I went to JUCO and came back. My first impression, I would say, this is a white freak I'm witnessing right now. And I called home and told some of my homeboys, hey, man, I just seen the freak of nature, man. He's white with long blonde hair. They was like, no, man, you tripping. I said, no, I'm not. Man, the things I seen Larry doing on the court, man, it was unbelievable. And, you know, back then, was no three-pointers and stuff like that. Larry has a little bit of hops, you know. He was dunking. And I was like, my God. So that was my first impression. I just seen a freak of nature, a white freak.
Greg, Indiana State wasn't – I mean, there wasn't much on TV anyway back then. This was pre-ESPN. So – you probably only heard and read about Larry Bird. Am I wrong? Like, are you thinking, yeah, they're undefeated, but they're in the Valley. Who is this Larry Bird dude? Like, come on.
Well, everybody would check the newspapers to see what was going on around the country. It wasn't like ESPN is able to bring everything to you on a nightly basis. So you had to do your research. You had to dig deep to find out what was going on. And for the most part, you just knew names. You didn't know faces. You know, if a guy was averaging 30 points and, in Idaho or Montana, you knew his name, but you didn't know what he looked like or what he played like. But we saw Larry Bird. We heard of Larry Bird. We heard, you know, we saw the name. And I agree with Carl. It was quite a revelation when we found out that Larry was a white kid. And we pretty much found that out when we saw him on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Maybe a little bit before that, but you just automatically, you know, basketball is an urban sport. We automatically thought that, you know, he was probably a black kid making all this noise in the state of Indiana, but man, he could play. He could play. He was absolutely incredible with some of the things that he could do. Not the most athletic guy, but he understood the game. He knew how to play. He knew how to, you know, integrate his game with others. And we were truly, truly worried about Indiana State when it came time to face them.
So Carl, and
let me just say this. It wasn't just because of Larry. Obviously, Larry was the focal point, but the whole team, I mean, they were 33-0 and forget the competition that they played in their conference. I mean, they didn't play their conference all the way up to the final game. They had to beat some other teams outside of that conference. So we were definitely worried about them.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma, Arkansas, DePaul. I mean, you played some guys in the tournament. I think that's probably where you earned a little more national respect, Carl. Going into the tournament, again, did you feel like nobody was giving you any credit, even though you were undefeated because you were coming out of the Valley, or no?
We didn't get any credit. We was the underdogs all year. The only one that loved us was Al McGuire, and that was my guy. Al McGuire believed in us. He pubbed us up. Billy Packer hated us, thought we was overrated and this, that, and the other. So Al McGuire was on our team, on our side. Nobody believed us, and we didn't even care. We didn't read the articles. We didn't talk about any of that stuff. We just say, take it one game at a time. And we did believe internally, each individual guy, that we can beat anybody because we had a great unit.
Yeah.
And everybody knew their role, and everybody was cool with their role, and there wasn't no jealousy, this, that, and we had 15 blue collar workers.
Yeah,
you know, we were all blue collar, you know, and we believed in each other, but nobody believed in us. I think deep down inside that motivated all of us, and we were like, I'll show you type of attitude, and so that's what we strived on that big time. Yeah.
So give me your guys' kind of favorite stories leading up to the game. Like, what was it like? You know, obviously the NCAA tournament, the Final Four now is so different than it was then, right? I mean, you've got all the media coverage. You know, they're in their hotels, and like, it's just it's ridiculous now. What was it like then, Greg?
Well, when we got to Salt Lake City, we were the first team to get there. Because we won our regional final game on a Sunday. We beat Notre Dame in Indianapolis. And when we got back to East Lansing, Michigan, people were treating it as though we had already won the championship. You know, we were getting to the Final Four for the first time in like 20 years for Michigan State. And it was a big deal. And Coach Heathcote, Judd Heathcote, he didn't want us getting too full of ourselves. He didn't want us to get patted on the back too much. We still had two more games to win. So he decided that we would get out of East Lansing as quickly as possible and get to Salt Lake City. So we got to Salt Lake City, I think, on a Wednesday, and we weren't going to play until Saturday. And when we got to Salt Lake City, he put us through some grueling practices. It was like training camp at the beginning of the season. And that was a way to kind of get us back in focus, bring us back down to earth, make us understand that there's still some work to be done. And Salt Lake City is not the most glamorous place, as you can imagine. I mean, it's beautiful. You know, it's beautiful there. But
not as a kid. As a kid, you don't want to be in Salt Lake.
Yeah, and not a whole lot to do. So we were sequestered, if you would. You know, it felt sort of like being in isolation. But it did allow us to galvanize, to re-galvanize as a team, and to understand exactly what our purpose for being there was. And, you know, our first round opponent was Indiana, was Pennsylvania, University of Penn, who had beaten two teams that beat us. We lost to Syracuse the year prior, and they beat Syracuse that year. And we lost to North Carolina earlier in the season at North Carolina by a point, and they beat North Carolina in the tournament. So we were no way taking Pennsylvania lightly. We knew that we had to come out and play our game and play the best of our ability in order to advance to the championship game. When we did that, we played the first game on Saturday. Indiana State and DePaul played the second game. We did not, after we won our game, we got in, you know, we got our showers. We went out, I think we caught just a little bit of the first half action between Carl's team and Indiana State led by Mark Aguirre. But we didn't want to watch too much of it because we didn't want to go in any direction. We didn't want to look at Indiana State and get overconfident. We didn't want to look at Indiana State or DePaul and worry too much. So we left at halftime. And by the time we got to our hotel and got settled in, we tuned in just in time to see Indiana State pull that game out by 2 points. We weren't really pulling for either team. It really didn't matter who we played. We believed and felt that if we played the way we were capable, that we would be okay against either opponent.
Before we continue that interview, I have to let you guys know that it's that time of year again. We waited 2 years for this moment, and it's finally here. March's biggest tournament is back. Gonzaga is getting ready to run the table. Slippers are being fit as we speak. And our partners at DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook, are putting our listeners at the center of the action. How? If you bet $4 on an underdog in a select game this week, and that underdog wins, you win $256. That's right. $256. Here's how it works. Download the app now and use the promo code FIELD68 when you sign up. Scroll through the list of select underdogs, bet $4 on them to win, and cash $256 when they do. There's no better way for you to put your college hoops knowledge to use than to put your money where your mouth is with DraftKings Sportsbook. It's safe, it's secure, it's reliable, and you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. So remember, the code is FIELD68, that's FIELD68, to turn $4 into $256. For a limited time only, must be 21 years or older. Restrictions apply. Go to DraftKings.com for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Carl, what do you think? Larry didn't say a whole, or maybe he did say a whole lot to you guys. I don't know. I mean, obviously, media-wise, we know how Larry's always been for the most part. What do you think he was like with this matchup against Magic? Because I heard he kind of toned it down a little bit and downplayed it while Magic wanted it and in typical Magic fashion, talked about it and had no problem hyping it up.
Well, it was the first time when we was heading into the Final Four, the first time I kind of seen Larry did tone things down because prior to all that, you know, Larry talked a lot of stuff, man, and he backed it up. And he was, you know, this guy can't guard me. I ain't afraid of him. You know, always something. And I think he used that stuff to motivate himself. But once we got, like, closer to Salt Lake, to arrive in Salt Lake, he kind of toned it down. I didn't hear much from him. And as they say now, I think, well, he had his game face on real early.
Yeah.
Because he was chill. He was really chill. And with the media, he was never hated the media. So I did all the media stuff. You know, I was pushed to do that.
You're good at it. You're good at it.
But you know, he didn't know much about Magic. He didn't say nothing much about Magic. None of that kind of stuff. He didn't say nothing about Michigan State. And Larry kind of dictated the tempo of what we was going to do on and off the court. Larry's like, I don't want to go see none of the games. I don't want to see any of them. You know, I'm just ready for battle. And so we kind of went to the movie and stuff like that. We went and seen the movie and things like that. And, you know, man, this is Terre Haute, Indiana, man. And these are all Indiana guys. Man, it was just me, Alex Gerber, and Eric Curry, inner city dudes. I'm from the south side of Chicago. So we were city guys, inner city. So we out in the mall and doing this kind of stuff. So We were pretty much, my guys, just from Indiana, was really laid back, you know, and chilled out. You wouldn't even know that we had a game. If you looked at that team as a whole, like, aren't y'all here to win a championship? You could not tell.
Really?
But I just want to share one story, and this was a highlight of my Final Four, one of them, the biggest one. We had shoot around that morning of the game, the first game. Billy Packer was on the side over there interviewing Coach Hodges after the shoot around. And so now Larry, I don't know, everybody know now, he's one of the biggest pranksters in the world. You know, you cannot sleep with Larry. So Larry came up to all of us and he go, hey everybody, grab a ball. I don't know, it was 15 of us. We all grabbed the ball off the rack and he said, on three. When the interview's over with Coach Hodges and Billy Packer, when Coach Hodges move out the way and walk away, we gonna blast Billy Packer. And so he went one, two, three, and we blast him. And it's because he never supported us. And Larry said, I guess you'll support us now, won't you? You know, so I loved it because I couldn't stand the fact that Billy Packer didn't give us no love, you know?
Yeah, you got all the way to the final game.
Michigan State is nationally known. We're from Terre Haute. Give us a little bit of love. So I just wanted to share that story.
How did Packer react when you threw 15 balls at him?
Well, he got that face changed. He got a little bit upset with that because we was going for the head, you know. Some of the guys hit him, and then you know, I guess, you know, he just kind of got over it. Larry had some words with him, like, I guess you know, you'll be on our team or something like that. So it is, and then we just walked off and went, got on the bus and went on back to the hotel. So, that was our team. And it was all dictated by stuff Larry would want to do. And it was a lot of fun, but prior to that game, prior to the Final Four, Larry got silent. It didn't bother me because if he talked or he got silent, I knew what he was going to do. He was an absolute killer. I knew that.
Where so Magic Greg would just go and go and go?
Well, we were a team that didn't shy away from challenges either. And like any competitor, individual competitor or team competition, you look for anything that can give you an edge or anything that can provide motivation. And I remember we were set to take the floor on Sunday after Indiana State's practice, after they practiced. So we were like in the corridor and they were still on the floor and we were waiting for them to come off. And as they were exiting, all of their players, and you know, this was nothing. Of course it was nothing, but we made a big deal out of it because, you know, we're looking for something. You know, when we played Notre Dame the game before, we got our motivation because Notre Dame was a team that was on television all the time.
Right.
And, you know, Notre Dame and Michigan State, they're not that far apart. So we watched them all the time. They were on national TV seemingly every weekend. And we only got a few national television games. We felt we were better than they were. So we really wanted to play it and prove it. And we got a chance to play them in their state for the right to go to the Final Four. And, you know, we beat them handily. And they had six future NBA players on that team. And you know, and they had been to the Final Four the year before. And we beat them. We beat them up. So, you know, the motivation was we were a little bit envious of all the coverage that they got. And we were just as good and we weren't getting the same type of coverage. So we were looking for something to give us a bump from Indiana State, but we couldn't find anything because, you know, they were a different conference. We hadn't played them. We didn't really know them. They didn't know us. But we got a little bit when they walked off the court after practicing. They all had on these cowboy hats. and as they were walking past us, nobody spoke. No one acknowledged, no one said anything. And Urban and Larry, they knew each other because they had played in an international competition, I believe in Russia, prior to the season. So they had a bit of history, but Larry didn't acknowledge, Urban. And so after that, it was like, man, look at these dudes, you know, the nerve with these cowboy hats on and everything. And then later on, I read that that had nothing to do with us. You know, just it was something that they had for their own team. But we used that as motivation. So, okay, we'll get them tomorrow night. You know, they don't want to talk. They, you know, and they were strutting these hats and all this stuff. So, you know, we used that. You know, it was something that we conjured up, that we made up, but it provided a little source of fire for us that we could feed off.
Yeah.
what was the game like? Well, I mean, you people don't know that. For people that don't know this, you guys were leading scorers 3 and 4 in the game, other than Larry and Magic. Larry did not have his typical game in that game, Carl. Had you seen that a lot before, or was it just at a different level with Michigan State?
Never seen it. I say Michigan State really did their homework. They did a fantastic job on him. I seen him get double teamed before, but I never seen that. And what startled me, what got in my head a little bit, I've seen the frustration in Larry's face, and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had a pretty good game. I actually was just 2 points under my average. And so just recently, I've been looking at those stats, and I said, you know, I should have shot the ball more.
We're glad you didn't.
You know, I was like, I ain't taking enough shot attempts, you know.
Hey, Larry still would have yelled at you.
but they did a good job, and they had the size too to kind of sandwich Larry and stuff like that. So I had a feeling, I'm saying, oh, this is different. They did their homework. This is different. And I seen the frustration in his face. And so I was like, yep.
So well, we spent that Sunday in practice getting ready for Indiana State. Keep in mind, you only have a day and a half to prepare.
Yeah.
After you find out who your opponent's going to be, but Judd Heathcote did a brilliant thing to help us prepare for Larry. First of all, we had never faced a guy who was 6'9", who could shoot the basketball from anywhere on the floor, but who could also pass it, keep his teammates involved, and blend the two the way Larry could. And we didn't have anybody on our scouting team that could do that either. So what Judd Heathcote provided for us, he took Urban Johnson off the starting team and put him on the scouting team, and put Jay Benson in his place, on the starting team. Now Jay Benson was a starter all year, but Jay was playing with a broken foot. They shot him up with Novocaine and all this stuff. So Jay was playing at 50%, but Urban went on that scouting team, and he was 6'9" like Larry, could pass like Larry, couldn't shoot like Larry, but it didn't matter. But on that particular day, we just wanted him to take the shots. But on that particular day, he made everything he took. He made every shot, and he was loving it, because on the scouting team, you get to do what you want.
Right.
You don't get yelled at. So, I mean, he was lighting it up. And Coach Heathcote was screaming, you know, doggone it, that's Larry Bird. That's not Urban Johnson. You got to get out there. And, you know, we're thinking, Larry's not going to make those shots. Those aren't his shots. And he's making them. And, you know, Judd is screaming, if you can't stop him today, what the hell are you going to do with Bird tomorrow? Well, you know what? It was brilliant, as I said earlier, because it gave us an idea of how we had to play him, how we were going to attack him. And Carl's right. We didn't just flat out double him from the beginning, but we played a 2-3 matchup zone, but we kept a man on him. And when he got the basketball, then we sent a second guy.
Right.
And because we had the length we had, we were able to cut down some of those passing lines and, you know, passing lanes, kind of impair his vision just a little, and contest his shots. I think Larry shot 7 for 21 in that game, and that was not Larry Bird-like, especially when he had just shot 16 of 19 against DePaul. But we knew we couldn't let him, pick us apart. We knew we couldn't let him just have his way. So it was the ultimate sign of respect that we would put so much defensive concentration on him and take it. We knew that Carl was an excellent scorer, but we were really looking to take our chances with their other three guys, Alex Gilbert and Brad Miley and Steve Reed.
Carl, what was it like after the game? Do you remember coming back in and how you guys were and what Larry's kind of mood was? I assume it wasn't good.
It was sad. Larry had his head down. He fought himself. He blamed himself. He kicked himself. He let us down. He let Terre Haute down. He had promised that he was going to bring a championship to Terre Haute. He was down. And the only thing he was saying, I need to get in the gym. I need to get in the gym and work on my freaking game. And when we got on the flight to go to back to Terre Haute, it was down, you know. It was quiet and it was down. And then when we land, we had a little assembly. We kind of cracked jokes, big crowd at the airport, big crowd at the assembly. Larry got up, cracked a few jokes. And right after that, I was like, what you going to do, man? Because I know it was a frat party later on that night on campus that I was going to go to. I was going to go to the campus set. And Larry said he was going over to the boys club to get some shots up. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And that's what he did. But it was a sad time. We were all disappointed and had our heads down a little bit. It was sad. Real sad.
Greg, the greatest memory you have of that game and maybe the aftermath of that game is what?
Well, it was nerve-wracking for the most part. I thought we were on our way to really opening that game up. We had a 16-point lead, and I picked up my fourth foul in the first 4 minutes of the second half, and then that game became very, very tight. So it was obviously a relief when we were able to get our act together and pull the game out, win the national championship that we had sought to win after we got knocked out of the tournament the year before by Kentucky. We lost in the regional final to Kentucky. They go to the Final Four and they win the championship. We were just as good as Kentucky, but we lost by three. So it was our goal all year to get back and win it. So for us to do that, it was relief. Not a whole lot of exhilaration. I guess that would come later. But when you put so much into a season, a lot of hard work, you would think that when you finally achieve your goal, that you're bursting at the seams with jubilation, but it wasn't quite like that. It was more relief than anything else. And for me, especially because I was the only senior on the team, I was done, win or lose, I was done. But I remember when we got back to the hotel, we went to our rooms and we kind of just was doing our own little thing. And there was a big gathering in the hotel lobby, folks wanting to see us. So my dad, who was my mother and father and my brother and my girlfriend, who's now my wife, they were there in Salt Lake City. And so my dad came up to the room and he says, hey, fellas, you know, you got a lot of folks down here who would like to just at least acknowledge you and congratulate you. So, you know, if you can, come on down. And so we did. And we went down and we shook a few hands and said a few words. And then the next day we got on the airplane and we flew back to East Lansing. We had to go through Chicago. In O'Hare Airport, we ran into the famous singer at the time, Gino Vannelli. He had watched the game the night before. And so we took pictures with him. He was all excited. We were excited. And he promised us that, you know, within a couple of weeks, we'd all receive the entire collection of his albums and that sort of thing. So that happened. That was really exciting. When we got back to Lansing, East Lansing, seemingly the whole city was at the airport and on the route between the airport and Jenison Fieldhouse, our home gymnasium. We had an assembly in there. The place was packed to the rafters. And that's when I think it really started to hit us that, you know what, you guys, you know, you did this. You accomplished what you set out to accomplish. We had a parade a couple of days later, like 200,000 people at the parade. It was just incredible. It was unbelievable. But, you know, my greatest memory is not one thing. It's a collection of things. And for me, you know, some of it was bittersweet because, you know, we play the sport because we love it. we enjoy being a part of a team, the camaraderie that's attached to that. But in the midst of all the celebration for winning the championship, for me personally, it was the recognition that I'm done and I'm not going to be with these guys anymore. You know, these are my guys, these are my brothers, these are my teammates, these are my friends. And now that part is over. You know, we're not going to be competing together anymore. So that was a sense of sadness, but at the same time, knowing that I was walking off having won my final game as a collegiate at the highest level in the biggest game that we play, that was really, really gratifying.
Well, listen, I appreciate you both joining us, reliving one of the greatest games, a game that changed college basketball, the 1979 national title game. Carl Nix, Greg Kelser, we appreciate it. And thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
All right, anytime.